Thanks everybody for taking the time to join our first quarter results call. So first of all, I'd like to start by saying how pleased and above all proud I am that we've been able to report a statutory profit in the first quarter of £7.2 million, as well as a small underlying profit as well. An important step towards sustainable profitability from 2021. I'm just going to move my screen. It looks like I need to turn it. There we go. Sorry about that. Important step towards profitability from 2021. Really proud of the team who have delivered a resilient performance by maintaining our focus on income generation, simplification, and by reducing our operating costs. Next year will be our 150th anniversary of the Cooperative Bank, and I believe that sustainable profitability will help unlock our ambition to continue to be the UK's ESG bank of choice. So before Louise and I get into the presentation, I'd also like to make reference to the other announcement that we've made this morning. We are pleased to welcome JC Flowers & Co and Bain Capital Credit as new shareholders of the bank, having purchased shares previously owned by Blue Mountain, subject to regulatory approval, of course. We look forward to working with them and all our stakeholders as we develop our future thinking. So Louise will run through the financials shortly as usual, but first I'll start with the next slide on page 2, where I've set out the progress we've made against our priorities. Firstly, our relentless focus on costs continues, and in the first quarter we've seen the benefit of actions taken in 2020 with both an underlying and statutory profit. This is a significant milestone for the bank, and I'm pleased that we're on track with our expectations of a return to sustainable profitability in and from 2021. Our results also benefit from improved mortgage margins, and as we signalled at the full year, we are seeing completion margins in the first quarter at around 210 basis points, which is around 5 basis points higher than Q4 and 50 basis points higher than Q3. We also signalled a strong pipeline at the full year, and I'm pleased to report that net lending growth is about £1 billion in the quarter, with completions of £1.6 billion. Our strongest quarter of completion since the start of 2017. Over 20% of these completions are for first-time buyers. Our pipeline remains strong in Q2 at around £2 billion, and today we're revising our customer asset guidance upward by £1 billion. Our franchise investment is returning to a steady state, as we said before, from 2021, and we have started our new programme to transform our legacy estate. I think you've heard us refer to this before as the Red Estate or the Britannia Estate, to reduce the number of mortgage and savings platforms that we operate. We're on track and where we expect it to be at this time in the programme, and we expect spend and progress to ramp up over the rest of this year. Another area where we continue to invest is our SME franchise. In the first quarter, we have successfully launched a number of new services and products for SME customers, including a brand new mobile app, a new business credit card, and the pay-as-you-grow scheme for business bounce-back customers. And there's more to come during the course of this year. As part of our commitment to the Capability and Innovation Funding Scheme, we feel that we're very much on track. And as we reported previously, we performed ahead of expectations in the incentivized switching scheme and have a strong pipeline of customers heading into Q2. Finally, as the original ethical bank and the number one ethical banking brand, I was keen to reinforce our position with a number of refreshed ESG commitments at the time of our year-end results. We are making good progress against these objectives, and I do look forward to sharing a fuller update with you alongside our interim results at the half year. So I'll now hand over to Louise, and she can just talk you briefly through the financials.
Thanks, Nick. Good afternoon, everyone. So starting with the income statement on page 3, we are reporting a statutory profit before tax of £7.2 million, compared to a statutory loss before tax this time last year of £27 million. This improvement is driven by the themes Nick has just highlighted, which were those we identified as key priorities at the start of the year. Our underlying result is also a profit in the quarter of £2.6 million, compared to an underlying loss this time last year of £14.3 million. Total income has increased by 7% to £81.2 million. Net interest income has increased by 10%, reflecting the growth in mortgage balances, at improving margins, which I'll discuss further on a later slide. We have seen a 9% reduction in other operating income, mainly reflecting the reduced transaction volumes we have seen during the national lockdown, which has an adverse impact on fee and commission income. However, we have benefited by £4.2 million from gilt sales, which is a £2.3 million increase on last year. Operating expenditure has improved 11% or £9.9 million in comparison to the first quarter of 2020. The restructuring actions that we took in the second half of last year contributes approximately £5 million to this improvement, which benefits both staff and non-staff costs. And our progress on cost reduction is broadly aligned to expectations at this point in the year. Looking at impairment, our Q1 charge of £1.3 million primarily reflects the impact of the expected loss generated on net new mortgage lending of £1 billion. We continue to have a low risk book, and this is reflected in our asset quality ratio of 3 basis points. The average loan to value on core mortgages remains low at 56.2%, with an average completion LTV in the first quarter of 73.1%. Strategic project costs below the line have reduced since Q1 2020 by 50% to £4.7 million, which, as we've explained in previous presentations, is due to the completion of the Fix the Basics stage of our plan, notably separation from Co-op Group in the first quarter of 2020. Good progress has been made towards transformation objectives, but as Nick outlined, we expect the cost of strategic change to increase in upcoming quarters as activity ramps up. As you can see, non-operating income and expense amounts to an overall gain of £9.3 million, which mainly comprises a refund of business rates paid in relation to ATMs historically. We maintain a strong CET1 ratio of 19.9%, an increase of 0.7 percentage points since the end of the year. I will comment more on this later in the presentation. So, turning to page four for some more detail on our balance sheet and margins. In the top left chart, you can see that we have grown our net residential lending, our mortgages, by almost £1 billion. This represents mortgage balance growth of almost 6% in the quarter. The conversion onto the balance sheet of the pipeline at year end has been in line with expectations, which is encouraging given we also have a strong pipeline of £2 billion as we enter the second quarter. As a result of the strong mortgage balance growth today and the extension to government support schemes, particularly the stamp duty moratorium, we have upgraded our guidance on customer assets. Credit cards and overdraft balances have reduced as customers have continued to pay down these balances. And in our SME segment, customer assets have grown by 4%, reflecting further drawdown of bounce back loans and CBILS as the schemes drew to a close. In the top right chart, we show that trends from previous periods have continued, with growth of 2% across all customer deposits, and in retail, a continued shift towards low cost franchise and away from more expensive term deposits. In the bottom left chart, you can see the trend of customer net interest margin, which has improved in the second half of 2020 and is now fairly stable as expected at 151 basis points, despite the negative impact of a full quarter of interest expense arising on our MREL issuance back in November 2020. So, turning now to slide five, I set out further information relating to CET1 progression. Firstly, as I mentioned earlier, our CET1 ratio has increased by 0.7 percentage points to 19.9%. This is mainly as a result of management actions that we highlighted at the year end, which reduced risk-weighted assets, notably the final settlement of the Optimum transaction in cash and also the settlement of the surrendered loss debtor. This has been partially offset by growth in our balance sheet, including mortgage balance growth of almost £1 billion that I referred to earlier. Moving to the bottom half of the page and looking from left to right across the chart, by the end of 2021, we expect our CET1 ratio to reduce with the removal of the software intangibles benefit and the impact of risk-weighted asset inflation as a result of balance sheet growth. With an improving economic outlook, we have removed the adverse impact of HPI from our previous guidance, and we now expect 2021 CET1 ratio to be between 17 and 18%. Following the improved position at the end of 2021, we have also revisited expectations for 2022, showing a 1-2 percentage point improvement as a result of increased customer asset balances and improved economics. We also reflect a further 3 percentage points improvement given our revised estimated impact on risk-weighted assets of regulatory changes, notably PS 1120 and CP 1420, which were communicated earlier this month. Importantly, this remains subject to further validation and regulatory approval. Now, with that, I will hand back to Nick to give an overall update on our guidance before returning for Q&A.
Thanks, Louise. Thanks. So we're going to close with this page. It just gives you a single view of our updated guidance. Really pleasing to be able to revise our CET1 ratio guidance in a positive direction. So you can see that was originally 16-17, and we're guiding that to 17-18 now, along with the improved outlook on customer assets. Previously guided customer assets to 19-20, and now it's 20-21. For 2021. So later this year, we expect to hear from the PRA in terms of their thinking around the inputs that we provided and other tier banks provided on the discussion paper for MREL rules, and see what their position is on that. And I think that will, you know, certainly help to inform our capital issuance plans once that framework becomes clearer. That's all we wanted to say today. Louise and I have to take questions, of course, that you might have. See, there's a couple coming already. We're working with some new functionality, so we're just trying it out, so bear with us. I'll hand back to Gary, and he can remind you how to ask a question, and then we'll open it up.